The following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Positively Pro-Life, a podcast brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Positively Pro-Life aims to bring you inspirational stories, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm Bonnie Finnerty, Education Director at the Federation, and I am joined by my esteemed colleague, Maria Gallagher, the Legislative Director. Hi, Maria.
Hello, Bonnie. It's so good to be with you today.
It's good to be with you. And I do have a special announcement for our listeners. Much is happening in the pro-life movement right now, and unfortunately, that can mean some misinformation or confusion about some of the current events. So, Maria and I would like to invite our listeners to submit any questions you might have about life issues relating to abortion, infanticide, or euthanasia, and submit those questions to us so that we could answer them on an upcoming podcast. You just have to email me your question at lifelines@paprolife.org. That's lifelines@paprolife.org. We would love to hear from you. We would love to answer your questions. We don't have a date for that upcoming Q&A podcast, but we will keep all of your questions and we look forward to answering them. Now, as far as today's show goes, we have a phenomenal guest. We are so eager to speak to Catherine Davis, founder and president of the Restoration Project, which is dedicated to promoting the sanctity of life, rebuilding families, and educating Americans about issues impacting the Black community. She is a powerful voice at a critical time. In addition, Maria is going to set the record straight about the abortion pill reversal process. But first, we're going to start off with some inspiration. And we'll continue with the topic that I started last week, and that is abortion pill reversal success stories. Now, these are women who started the process of chemical abortion, but after taking the first pill, felt great regret and sought out a way to stop the abortion and save their baby. There is a medical process called abortion pill reversal that can be accessed by calling a hotline that will connect a woman to a medical professional who could prescribe a high dose of progesterone to counteract the abortion pill. On the Abortion Pill Reversal Network website, real women share their stories in their own words, and they are powerful voices. Last week, I shared Emily's. This week, I'd like to share Rebecca's. And in the interest of time, it is an abbreviated version, but the entire story can be found on the website, which I will post in the show notes. Rebecca writes this: "When I found out I was pregnant, I was fearful and uncertain. I had 8 months to go before I graduated nursing school. I was in a relationship that was going south by the minute. I had no car and little income. I was not ready to have a baby. All I needed to do was take a pill, and the rest would be history. No one had to know, and life could go on as I intended. This was a very persuasive argument. It seemed like the right decision until I took the abortion pill. After I took it, I began to think about how this world is only for a short while, but my choice to abort this baby would be eternal. It was crystal clear to me that I made a huge mistake. I began to search on Google. I clicked on abortion reversal. I called the hotline provided on the website. The nurse gave me a number for a doctor who told me to meet him at the hospital promptly. Everything was uncertain and surreal, but this doctor quieted those feelings. He was different from any other doctor I had met. He greeted me, he educated me, and most importantly, he spoke with me about my fears. Next, the medical goal was to flood my system with natural progesterone to overpower the abortion pill. This was followed by a course of progesterone for the rest of my pregnancy. After I went home, no bleeding or cramping occurred. The following Saturday, my mom accompanied me to see if the reversal worked. We met the doctor for an ultrasound. The baby had a strong heartbeat that resonated throughout the room. I was now worried about how much damage I had possibly done to this baby with the abortion pill. When I voiced these fears to the doctor, he never once succumbed to the negative what ifs. Instead, he always directed my attention to the miracle baby growing inside of me. Every ultrasound consultation and blood draw came out perfectly. My son was delivered at 8 pounds, 1 ounce with an Apgar score of 8 and 9. He was gorgeous. He takes my breath away every day. I completed nursing school, passing exams before and after the delivery. My boyfriend is on his way to becoming a good husband. As I laid my son down to sleep tonight, I started to cry. Despite every trouble I have my son in my life, and no problem seems too big with him. I feel so blessed to be his mom. I just want to hold my miracle son and pass our story on to the countless people who are just like us, those who need an answer and a glimpse of God's real plan. Thank you, Rebecca, for choosing life, and thank you for sharing your beautiful story with the world. Maria.
Bonnie, thank you as well. The following is from a news release from National Right to Life. On Friday, February 11th, House Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler, a Democrat from New York, sent a letter to Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg attacking Facebook for approving abortion pill reversal or abortion pill rescue ads. The letter argues that the APR process is a flawed theory, but supports this argument by using research promulgated by leading abortion researchers and apologists. Abortion pill reversal has saved over 3,000 babies, said Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life. For the chairman to call this a flawed theory when the evidence says otherwise is disingenuous. The abortion pill reversal process gives a woman the opportunity to save her unborn baby if she has only taken the first drug, mifepristone. Several years ago, two doctors, George Delgado of California and Matthew Harrison of North Carolina, independently theorized that they might be able to counteract the effects of mifepristone by giving the body enough additional progesterone to outcompete mifepristone at the body's hormone binding sites if done before the second pill, the prostaglandin, is taken. Prescribing progesterone is a recognized treatment for women who face miscarriage because of a history of low progesterone in pregnancy. Since then, several studies have been done showing that the success rate of the APR protocol is 64 to 68%. The idea that abortion pill reversal is based on flawed theory shows a lack of basic scientific knowledge, said Matthew Harrison, MD, a pioneer of the abortion pill reversal process. Our studies have consistently shown an up to 68% effectiveness rate versus only up to 23% fetal survival if nothing is done. And over 3,000 babies are now alive and represent a wave of abortion survivors that are a living voice for the unborn. Let's make this emergency use protocol available for the moms that change their minds about abortion. Bonnie.
Thanks so much, Maria. We got to get the truth out about this. It is my pleasure to introduce our guest for today. Catherine Davis is the founder and president of the Restoration Project. She often partners with the National Black Pro-Life Coalition, the Network of Politically Active Christians, and the Frederick Douglass Foundation in an ongoing effort to educate Americans about the issues that are impacting the Black community. Catherine, a public speaker and civil rights champion, is a magna cum laude graduate of Tufts University who attended the University of Bridgeport School of Law. Early in 2010, she partnered with the Radiance Foundation to launch one of the most news-gathering pro-life campaigns ever, the Endangered Species Billboard web campaign. Catherine was featured in numerous TV, radio, and newspaper features, including the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, ABC World News, NPR, and throughout the entire blogosphere. She believes in holding public officials accountable and legislatively chipping away at the practices and policies that are ravaging a free America. A former candidate for Congress in Georgia's 4th District, Catherine is focused on positive change through education, local state involvement, and peaceful action. And we are thrilled to have Catherine Davis here with us today. Hello, Catherine. Thanks for joining us. Oh, we can't hear you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's
okay.
Thank
you for having me. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here.
Great.
Well, we are so thrilled to have you. And can you tell us, how did you come to hold your pro-life views?
Well, I am a woman that had 2 abortions myself. My first abortion, I did because I was just selfish and I didn't want the responsibility of a child. I knew if I had told my mom that I was pregnant, she would have taken the child and raised it for me and allowed me to go back to school. But I didn't want that, so I had an abortion. And then something in me felt like I needed to justify that first abortion with a second, because, you know, I am woman, hear me roar. And so I had a second abortion, and both of my abortions were impacting. After the first one, I literally fainted. And in the second one, I heard the doctor counting my baby's body parts. And both of those, though, I said, I'll think about that tomorrow. I'm not going to think about it. So I kind of put that experience on a shelf in my brain until one day I was going to a Bible study. We had a Bible study at my church on Tuesdays called Noon Days. And instead of eating, you would go eat the word. And so I was going to eat the word. I'm the word. And I go bouncing into the Bible study and they announced the topic and it was abortion. And I was like a deer in the headlights. What do I do? Do I run? Do I stay? You know, what do I do? And the 2 pastors who were teaching that day recognized that I was in distress. And one got on one side of me and the other got on the other side of me, and they began to pray. And it was almost comical because I kept trying to get up to leave and they kept pushing me back down in the seat and saying, no, we're praying. And they prayed until they felt that I was healed. And then one of them put a book in my hand, Grand Delusions, The Legacy of Planned Parenthood, and said, read this and go do something about it. And so I did. I went home and I devoured the book in like a day and a half. And that very next day after I finished reading it, went to Virginia Right to Life and began to volunteer to speak against abortion. And that started my career, so to speak, in being a pro-life advocate.
We have something in common because I read Grand Illusions and that's how I became a pro-life advocate as well.
Yes.
So I highly recommend that book.
Yes, it was a very compelling book, very compelling. And that launched me. Yeah.
Can you tell us, what is the Restoration Project and why was it started?
Well, in 2015, I started the Restoration Project because I actually didn't want to start the Restoration Project because I felt like there were so many pro-life organizations out there that we didn't need just another one. But I had a God encounter, and he told me to get my 501c3 because I speak about life a little bit differently than many of the major pro-life organizations. I talk about it from the perspective of who abortion is having the greatest impact on, which is the Black community. And so I go around the nation educating about abortion and its impact. And so I needed to be able to raise resources to do that because I'm not independently wealthy. So I started the Restoration Project, which is a pro-life pro-family, pro-education organization that right now is focused on life, because without life, there's no family that needs an education.
Well, I think you might have just mentioned the three pillars upon which your organization is founded. Why are those so foundational to what you do?
Yeah, so, well, as I said, without life, there's no people. And the abortion industry has used its tools to deliberately attack one group of people, most identifiably, which is the Black community. You all know the history of Margaret Sanger and how she had a Negro project that was designed to impact the birth rate of Black women, Black children to Black women. But I've also found, as I'm going around, that there was a concerted movement to destroy the family in America. In 1969, the National Organization of Women, in their formational meeting, did a call and response kind of chant. You know, why are we here? To make revolution. What kind of revolution? A cultural revolution. And how are we going to make a cultural revolution? We're going to destroy the American family. And how are we going to destroy the American family? By destroying the American patriarch. And how are we going to destroy him? Through promiscuity, homosexuality, prostitution, and eroticism. So this organization that most women think are championing women's rights started out to destroy the family. And if you look across our culture today, you will see that they are absolutely succeeding, especially in the Black community, where today 73% of the families are headed by females and the fathers are absent. And so I believe we need to get the father back in the home to restore the boundaries that protect our children and our women. So that's why we have the pillar of family. And long ago, I learned that without an education, you're basically hopeless and without resources to be able to affect change in your life. If you can't read, then you're not going to get very far in our nation or in the world for that matter. And so we need to bring education back to reading, writing, and arithmetic, and not all of these sexual behaviors and all of the other cultural things that they are now introducing to our children. So I felt there needed to be a voice to impact those areas. And that's how I arrived at the three pillars.
And can you tell us more about the impact of abortion on the African American community? Because it's just very devastating when you stop and think about it.
Oh, it absolutely is. So if you go back to Planned Parenthood's history, Planned Parenthood is the leading abortion provider in the nation. Most of the messaging that you hear about in this nation comes through Planned Parenthood's organization. And they have continued the Negro Project that Margaret Sanger launched in 1939 to impact the Black birth rate. And what do I mean by that? Well, if you look at the tenets of the Negro Project, Margaret Sanger and Clarence Gamble wanted to pay Black ministers and physicians to go into the Black community and at that time preach birth control. And then later on, under Alan Guttmacher, who took over Planned Parenthood's leadership, in the 60s, he wanted to impact the Black birth rate through abortion. So picture this, 3% of the population in America are Black women of childbearing age, 3%, but we get 38% of the abortions. How can that be? It's not a natural phenomenon, it's happening because organizations like Planned Parenthood are targeting Black women and their babies. They put their surgical facilities in Black neighborhoods deliberately. They research the areas to find where they're going to put their surgical centers. And then the largest percentage of them, 79%, are in Black or Latino neighborhoods. They have their messaging directed towards Black women, even going so far as to tell Black women that if they carry their child or to term or give birth, that they're increasing their risk for death. That's how directed Planned Parenthood's messaging is. And so they are succeeding, because today, more than 22 million Black children have died at the hands of an abortionist in this country. That is more than the entire Black population in 1960s America. So they are succeeding. And in some communities like New York City, they are absolutely upside down, where more Black children are being aborted than are born alive. And so we work to impact those numbers and to try to reverse the genocide.
Catherine, can you tell us specifically about the Selma Project?
The Selma Project was one of my favorite projects, but we went to Selma, Alabama. One of the things that I've learned in working to stop abortion in our nation is just how substandard the abortion care providers are. Every community that you go in, if they get inspected, you're going to hear horror stories coming out of those facilities of, you know, instruments not being sterilized, of doctors refusing to wear gloves in between each procedure. Kermit Gosnell is an example of what we hear, where he was birthing children alive and then taking their lives. And so we heard about a physician in Birmingham, Alabama, who was working in violation of Alabama law. Alabama law said that if you perform 10 or more abortions in a month, you had to be licensed to do abortions. This abortionist in Selma was doing 90 abortions a month, and he was not licensed to do so. So we thought, we'll go to Selma and march across the Pettus Bridge, march for the babies, so to speak, but to call attention to the fact that there was an abortionist who was violating Alabama law. And so there were about 300 of us that gathered, and we had a prayer rally the night before. And then on the morning of Juneteenth, we marched across the Pettus Bridge to call attention to that illegal abortionist who had actually taken the life of a woman. That was in June that year of 2015, I think it was. Well, by December, that abortionist was out of business, not because the state closed them down, but because the community closed him down. Once they found out what he was doing, he got major pushback from the community there in Selma. And so he became a weight loss clinic by December of that year. Yeah, that was one of our better projects that we did.
Phenomenal.
Now, why do you think your billboard project with the Radiance Foundation generated such a strong media response?
Because for the first time, someone was calling attention to the real impact of abortion and all of the targeting that was going on. And that billboard project was phenomenal. We had this beautiful picture of a handsome little Black young man and his soulful eyes. And all it said was toomanyaborted.com. And so the media were like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And so we were able to then get into every major media outlet in the country except Fox. Fox was the only one that didn't interview either Ryan or myself. But MSNBC, CNN, Diane Sawyer, the New York Times, the LA Times, I mean, they all sent reporters to interview either myself or Ryan, and we were able to then tell the true story of abortion's genocidal impact to the Black community. It was phenomenal. And it was so successful that Planned Parenthood paid a marketing firm called Belden Russinello to come up with talking points that they could disperse amongst their followers so that if people were talking about our billboards, they were giving them talking points like ask why they want to make the disparities in healthcare for Black women worse. Why are they trying to make it worse? That was actually one of their talking points that they say still to this day. But it was phenomenal. And the entire world got to hear the true impact of abortion in America. It was phenomenal.
Catherine, do you have any upcoming projects for the Restoration Project?
Well, I do a couple of things that I am continuing to do, despite something that I'm going to announce to you in a few minutes. But I travel the nation educating women of influence, pastors' wives, ministry leaders, et cetera, about abortion's impact in the Black community. So if I can get between 30 to 50 women of influence together, I buy them lunch. I take them to a very nice restaurant. Right now I'm using Maggiano's because I love their family style. It's so much good food. And I educate about abortion's impact. The other thing I do here in Georgia, where I'm located, is I have a monthly luncheon for the pro-life community. It's called Luncheon for Life. And it's a networking opportunity to bring pro-life leaders together in our state so that we know what each other are doing. We can network with each other and be supportive of each other. So those are the two major projects that I'm working on this year.
And Catherine, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm so sorry, okay. We're running out of time, but okay. It was marvelous speaking to you. And remember, there's always a reason to choose life.